Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
A13, you there with us?
Hey, yo, hey, this what's up? This is Terrell calling from Tampa.
Hey, what's going on, Terrell?
Everything, just trying to catch a part of the show, please.
Yeah, I was just getting into what was going on there with the fights that were happening pretty much like a week and a half ago. I did go through the thing with Jared Hurd and here's Landy Lahr. And, you know, also the rematch between Caleb Truex and James McGill. I think you posted something on the Boxing Source Facebook page in reference to them recovering after the fight there. But in reference to this rematch that they had, I would say that, you know, DeGale kind of like he was a little bit more active in this fight than he was in the first fight. And that, you know, was part of why he was able to pull off the win here in the rematch to get the IBF Super Middleweight Championship back.
Yeah, just on that fight, it was definitely not a clean fight at all as far as just, you know, just flat out good action, stuff like that, a lot of head punts, stuff like that, and just kind of and it's just rough and tough. But, I mean, like I said, you know, DeGale did enough to secure that victory. Privately, I really wanted Caleb Truex to come out on top with that, you know, some of the narrative going into that fight or the rematch was the fact that DeGale supposedly wasn't ready on their first fight, coming back from injury and stuff like that. But I mean, bottom line, you take a fight, you sign for a fight, you train for a fight. If you're not ready, then we're dropping the fight. I mean, we've seen that recently from Terrence Crawford, I believe, with a hand injury, and we've seen that time and time again from numerous fighters in the past. When they withdraw from a fight, if you're not ready, you're not ready. And if you're not ready, you still go through the fight. We don't want to hear excuses in regards to why you lost the title, stuff like that. So, I mean, but DeGale comes out with the victory in the rematch. And I mean, at this point, there should be some opportunities out there for Truex. I mean, this guy did just win a title. It was no fluke. He won it straight up. So his name is out there now as a title holder. And I kind of say that kind of carefully. I mean, you look at someone recently here that won a title, but is pretty much nothing. And don't laugh at me because I'm not trying to rate this guy. But look at Charles Martin. Charles Martin, heavyweight, fell into a heavyweight title. And pretty much like, as you know, so did to when he got beat by Joshua, you know. So, I mean, and what has Martin done since then? Virtually nothing, you know. So with that said, I hope that Martin Caleb Truex can go into some more possible opportunities to keep his name out there to get some fights on network TV, stuff like that, you know. So what's next for to get, we'll see. We'll definitely see.
Yeah, the thing with DeGale, I think that he's, you know, a workman's like, so he would give a tough fight for anyone there in the super middleweight division. And, you know, I kind of see that he would pose for good matchups against a lot of people in that super middleweight division. Now, I don't know if they're going to have a third fight between Truax and James Gill, but if they do not, either he could, you know, still be able to fight somebody there in the super middleweight division, specifically in the IBF rankings. Caleb Plant would be a definite barometer between both of those fighters because we really don't know how good Caleb Plant really is at this point. You know, he's been able to, you know, do his thing and kind of like coast through victories with a lot of the opponents that he's had, but he hasn't really had a tough outing against somebody. So playing against Truex would be a pretty good matchup between those two, and if that happens, then I would like to see James Gill defend his title against Jose Uzcategui, who did beat Andre Durrell fairly convincingly in that fight that was at the Barclays Center on March 3rd. Just going in here, have you another caller here on the line, area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James and Terrell? How y'all doing today?
Hey. Hey, I'm still in recovery mode. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not in recovery mode still. What's going on, man?
Not much. Y'all talking about the card from 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yep. So I actually need to watch the Gale Truex fight again because when I was watching it, I was like really sleepy, and I ended up going to sleep on the main match. So I had to watch it again. Like I had to watch it last week. I ended up going to sleep on it.
That's what they say about a lot of Lara fights. So I'm not surprised at you.
Well, no, it wasn't that bad. It was pretty good. You know, Jared Hurd definitely brought it. And to that point, speaking on Jared Hurd, I'm definitely a fan of his now. You know, he may not have the conventional boxing style, but he does have a pretty strong will. And at that division, I think he does well. Like, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does against Charlo. But, you know, he takes people to deep waters, and he pretty much drowns them. And, you know, just like his continual, like, I don't know if I remember his style being that relentless, like him just throwing punches. It's not Paul Williams, but it's a la Paul Williams. You know, he throw punches. He never stopped throwing punches. And off of that alone, I can see him winning a bunch of fights.
Mm-hmm.
That and his endurance, of course. And if he could catch the punches from the smaller fighters, then, I mean, that's a weight class he could, you know, thrive in for a while, at least until, you know, he starts taking too much punishment. But I think he forced Lara to fight the fight that he wanted Lara to fight. And, you know, you can see Lara just mentally getting fatigued and physically getting fatigued. And then the body work that Hurd did was amazing. It stopped Lara from throwing punches, you know, later toward the mid and later toward the fight. And, you know, it just, like, I didn't score the fight, but I think the fight was competitive. You know, people who were saying that they thought it was a robbery or something, like they gave one to Hurd. I don't know how different I would change my mind if I actually scored the fight and looked for things, but, you know, at least with the eye test and just looking how her kind of controlled the fight and he forced Lara to fight the fight that he wanted to, and knowing that Lara's going to win the early round, her did his thing, man. I can't knock her. And, you know, like I used to knock her from him, you know, his style not being conventional. And I can't knock the man for that. Like, he wins fights, he gritty. And his style is to take you to deep water and throw a bunch of punches and drown you. And for him, at that weight class, it's effective. Will it be effective for other fighters? Who knows? But so far, you know, he definitely shedding people up like Danny Garcia used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing I was saying about Jared Hurd is that he kind of, you know, kind of like outworks or out. I would say he's like someone who's like trying to say, hey, let's see if you can hurt me. And if you can't hurt me, then I'm going to still be coming at you. I'm going to come at you until you basically break down. And I think that, you know, that's what we saw in this fight against Tony Harrison to a certain point, and we really saw it, you know, even more in this fight against Austin Trout, because, you know, Austin Trout was really tagging him, but, you know, it wasn't really enough to the point where it would really affect Jared Hurd. So once, you know, Austin Trout, like, stopped doing punches after the sixth round or seventh round or so, that's when Hurd kind of, like, stepped up his game. And, you know, here against Arislandi Lara, you know, Lara had the energy to go from round one to round 12, but he was still getting caught a couple of times, you know, during that particular, you know, encounter. And that's how he got caught in the 12th round and ended up going to the canvas for that knockdown that kind of, like, proved to be the difference in that particular fight. So that, you know, that's how I, like, assess that. But what do you say about him potentially, you know, fighting Jermell Charlo if Charlo gets through his next fight that's coming up in June?
So I'm gonna speak off of emotion right now. Something don't feel right about Charlo and how he, like, moves through the media. It's different about what he does and, like, what, say, a name another fighter who talked crap.
Well, Adrian Broner is one that talks a lot of crap.
Adrian Broner, you could tell Adrian Broner doing it for show, but when he does it, it just, I don't know, the dude, like, really brash, and I can't take that away from him, but, like, I don't know, my boy need to polish up a little bit more, because he definitely is like, too raw, and he say way too much stuff that be on his mind and not, like, thinking about what he's saying stuff, and then combine that with just, like, I don't know, he just act like a young dude, you know, I was going to say another word, he act just like a young guy, like, just,
I get it.
And I feel like he needs to grow up a little bit. And so with that, taking it away from my emotional thought toward him, I think he has a very good chance of, you know, beating her. But I'm not going to even lie. Going into the fight, I would probably want her to win the fight just off of her's workmanship. And, like, for example, when he knocked old Buddy out, instead of him just being like, yeah, I knocked you out, you know what I'm saying, I know I'm better than you, like, it was, like, he ain't let the shit go, you know what I'm saying? Like I get it, mm-hmm. They were talking the whole way through the match and stuff, but is his blood really that bad with everybody? Like, everybody, is his blood mm-hmm. really that bad with everyone? Like, everyone he fights, is it really that, you know, like, that much of bad blood? Like, I can see if you don't like somebody, and, like, Ward and Kovalev, I can see that. Like, if Ward handled it, like, on some, like, I don't like you, I ain't trying to like you, I can see that, you know, but I don't know, I just question, like, is it like that with everybody? And so I get it, they hype up the fight, but I don't know. I just hope my boy don't get into trouble, you know, and just offer some flying off the handle on some young bullheadedness, you know.
Right.
If fought, I would probably want her to win the fight, like, realistically. And so,
yeah.
I don't know. That might
be
me being a hater,
completely
though.
I understand your whole thing with Jermell Charlo. And I've said this about Jermell Charlo and Jermall Charlo, and you brought up the example of Jermell Charlo when he had his win in October where he had his last defense, and the way that he kind of, you know, had his reaction to that, you know, with his brother Jermall Charlo, was kind of like turned a lot of people off, you know, I would say. You know, after his first round knockout win against Eric Newman. And I said this, like, after that particular fight, and it basically has carried over into now, in that the Charlo brothers kind of, like, put themselves as, like, amigos of boxing, in that they kind of carry themselves in a way that, you know, not a lot of people really understand them, one, or not a lot of people want to understand them or want to get behind them because of the way that they carry themselves. And they kind of like say that they don't care, but, you know, sometimes that takes you a long way if you handle yourself a certain way. Only a few people can really, you know, be that type of quote-unquote bad guy in the sport of boxing. And like you were saying, you kind of like seen if you could bring up examples like Adrian Broner talking trash is a lot different because he has his overall persona and how he carries himself in that he knows how to put that whole package together. While the Charlo brothers don't look like they put in their whole package together when they do what they do. And that's why, like, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about Jamal Charlo and his, you know, his Instagram live video, where he was talking about Gervonta Davis and Adrian Broner while he's on the same card with Gervonta Davis and Adrian Broner. So it's like, why would you do stuff like that, either whether it's for PR or not? It just doesn't look like a good decision, and it doesn't, you know, come off well by doing that.
I'll add in on that too. Just going back to the Laura Charlo Laura Hurd fight, definitely impressed with Hurd. But I say that the number one thing that he needs to take care of going forward is defense, because he and it was definitely impressive, like you stated, Mike, for Hurd to sit there and make Laura fight his fight. Because time and time again, we've seen Laura fight his fight, and the opponent has to take this style, chasing around the ring, things like that. But I mean, that's Laura's style. But so it's definitely impressive for her to impose his will and impose his style on that fight. But I mean, you guys recall from that fight, Laura hit him flush on the chin countless times, you know. So her definitely needs to clean that defense up in order to face the deep fighters of that defense going forward. Now, he's definitely able to dominate people in that top 10, that vie for his title and stuff like that. But when we talk about the elite people of the division, and right now it's probably the only elite person out there right now is Charlo. We don't know what Kell Brook is going to bring to the table at 154, but I think it would be kind of wise to take Kell Brook at the center at 154. But for her, definitely need to clean that defense up because Laura hit him too many times clean. And, I mean, James, what's – the Charles at 154, is he the one that beat J-Rock, knocked him out?
The one that's on 160 right now is the – yeah.
Okay, well, even still with that, I mean, we both know both Charles got some power. And like I said, when you fight another elite fighter, you definitely need to have all your little deficiencies cleaned up, so that might come back to bite you at some point. So, mm-hmm. I mean, even the prospect of Hurd and Charlo – it's definitely stimulating. Definitely something that we really want to see. And you guys recall before the Hurd Laura fight, a lot of us had the same opinion. Like, we just want Laura to get that loss and get out of the way. But really, honestly, I give Laura a lot of respect because, like I said, he fought to Hurd style, and not only that, he gave us a good fight. It was no stinking sticker fight, nothing like that at all, you know. And so with it said, he's not done yet. He's definitely not done yet. So I know he wants a rematch. That's probably not going to happen. But Laura's definitely not done yet. Still has a voice within that division. But like I said, with Charlo, I mean, both those guys, I mean, like you stated on that Instagram feed from those guys, it's kind of a big boo to call out some smaller fighters, because in reality, Charlo will never fight Broner or Gervonta Davis. It will never happen. So what? It's almost like a freaking heavyweight calling out somebody at super middle. It's not going to happen. That is, unless you're David Haye fighting a cruiserweight. That happens. We know that. But yeah, I mean, to Charlo, I mean, like you guys said, these guys just need to mature in life. You know. I don't know if that's going to take a loss from one of those guys, and I'm saying that's why Mike wanted him to lose potentially against her. He gets on that humble pie. You know, let's say these guys need to mature in life, grow up, realize opportunities, and capitalize on those opportunities. It doesn't take all that mess to generate interest. It doesn't take that, because these guys are very skilled fighters, and I appreciate the fact that they're freaking twins, and they're both on the elite level. So, you know, we definitely don't want to see all this just Instagram, social media mess, and that goes on these days that we're seeing with people like Broner and things like that. But you already know these guys are what we call millennials, and that's what they embrace, and that's what we're probably going to expect going forward until they get that humble pie.
Yeah, that's a good
until
point there. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
And to Terrell's point, like, I don't, like, want him to lose, man, but it just comes off that he a dick. Like, in his interactions with other people, it just really come off like he a dick. And so he doesn't come off as a likable guy. Guys, and not saying that he has to come off like that. Like, Adrian Broner talk crap to people, but he does have the whole silly part to offset it. Yeah, he's too silly at times, but he has that thing to offset it. Andre Ward don't take nothing from no one. But at the same time, you know, he makes a point to the dude come off like, seeing his, like, little interview where he was walking around in the casino and stuff, it was just like, I was like, man, he real young.
I'm sure you guys both remember back when just when Broner was first really getting up to that top level. I remember he started in Vegas one time on video burning $100 bills. And that that's just so disrespectful to just in general. I mean, why would you do that? Just because you got it, you're gonna just burn money, you know? And
yep.
and we both know Broner still has to escape those type of antics. I mean, from his multiple arrests, just always in the news, Twitter beef, all this other stuff, this little rap career that he wants to pursue and stuff like that. And, you know, I mean, granted, this is the land of opportunity, but you would like to see someone that, with some real skills, with some real talent, capitalize on that. I mean, he was under the wing of Mayweather, so and that's the ultimate guidance right there, the ultimate big brother that you want in your life or your career. But you just sidetrack yourself while it's other antics. It's just kind of sad to see, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I still, you know, talk or think about the little thing that he had, you know, on in May of 2015, where, you know, he was like, you know, kind of like drunk and. He was, like, there with his brothers and his entourage, and his entourage got into a little scuffle in, MGM Grand, and he almost, you know, basically, you know, got himself in trouble at MGM Grand. And if he didn't, you know, basically make it over to the, you know, elevator area for the rooms, he could have been in, you know, even more trouble with somebody, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of... you know, something where he just has to watch himself because, like I said, it doesn't take much for him to basically get set off. We know about the whole incident that he had in that bowling alley where he, you know, lost a bunch of bowling matches and ended up having to, you know, pay out money, but he didn't want to do that. So he just got to be careful in what he does. And here in this particular fight that he's going to have at the Barclays Center against Jesse Vargas, I mean, I say it's make or break for him because his overall persona makes him have too much on the line to say that he could have another loss. I mean, yeah, he'll be, you know, 33-4 if he loses, but, you know, with the way that he carries himself and how his overall aura kind of like builds on him winning fights, he just can't lose another fight, specifically how he lost his fight against Mikey Garcia. He was basically overmatched in that particular fight. So he can't afford to have another loss like that against Jesse Vargas there.
Hey, I didn't realize that. Vargas pretty much at 5'10". I didn't realize that. I'm not sure if that, how significant that would be in their fight. But, I mean, I think Vargas only has, like, what, 10 KOs, I believe it is. But still, that, if Vargas could adhere and stick to a game plan of being fighting like we've seen before, fighting like the taller man, that could really cause problems for Broner and for Broner. And even on top of that, we've seen that when Broner is not able to impose his will on another fighter, he typically kind of, in a sense, retreats within a shell like he did against Mikey Garcia and not really go for it, you know.
Yep.
So, I mean, it definitely remains to be seen if Vargas, like I said, use that fight like a tall guy, use that jab, keep that distance, and use that. And I'm not sure. I'm just guessing that Vargas also has a longer reach as well, and that could definitely be a factor as well. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yep. I was saying, like, as long as Vargas becomes the active fighter and is able to throw his jabs a lot more, he could basically have Adrian Broner reset, because Broner is not the guy that, you know, kind of like moves his head in a bombing situation. He'll probably like move his head back, but he doesn't. He's not like an effective counterpuncher, and he doesn't throw that many combinations. So that could pose like a couple of problems there for Adrian Broner if Jesse Vargas is just able to be an active jabber at the outset of this fight there. Pretty much like 15 minutes into overtime, just had like a couple of other things that I wanted to bring up as far as like news is concerned. We've known over the past couple of weeks that the fight between Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez has basically been scrapped because of Canelo Alvarez's positive test there. And over the past couple of weeks, it looks like they were, you know, trying to scramble to see if they could have a replacement for Gennady Golovkin to fight there on the May 5th card. But we haven't really seen anybody be officially announced yet. For starters, and, you know, now it's basically going to be, you know, 2 weeks away from that particular fight. So I doubt that there's going to be an actual fight taking place unless, you know, they have like some type of, replacement fight. And they were also talking about if, you know, with the fight with Gennady Golovkin, he said that he wanted to fight, but now it's not going to be at the T-Mobile Arena. They were also thinking about putting it at the MGM Grand, but that's been scrapped as well. So if they're going to have a fight with Gennady Golovkin taking place, most likely it will be at the StubHub Center in Carson, California, there on May 5th. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that, you know, pretty much found out today is that the fight that was going to be for all the major cruiserweight championships on May 4th is going to be postponed, as Oleksandr Usyk suffered an injury here that was basically reported. So now with Usyk injured, the World Boxing Super Series final at cruiserweight against Murat Gassev. Well, actually, that's supposed to be on May 11th, actually. That's going to be postponed. So you have the thing there, May 5th, that is basically scrapped. And now the fight between Oleksandr Usyk and Murat Gassiev will be postponed. So you have two big fights in boxing that will, you know, at least be postponed or basically scrapped all together. So that, like, puts, like, a huge damper in as far as, like, the overall schedule in May right there. So just wanted to get y'all reactions to those, you know, the news of the Gennady Golovkin fight pretty much being moved out to Carson, California, most likely, and the postponement of Murat Gassev and Oleksandr Usyk.
Yeah, I'll speak real quick, and I definitely want to take a good opportunity to bash Triple G here, right? So, yeah, I know your fight with Canelo is canceled, thrown off. We know all about the positive drug test, the two positive drug tests had by Canelo, even though the WBC continues to embrace him. And, James, that was a funny, very funny catch you posted within the group today. I forgot what the thing on that was. Basically, says WBC.
Oh, we back Canelo?
Yeah. that was so funny. I really laughed out loud, literally, on that one. Triple G. So, no opponent right now. And I tell you, a boxer that we've always talked about and just continue to realize his potential is Andretti. He actually voiced his concern and said he would step up to take the fight on short notice. Now, it probably shouldn't be on pay-per-view, but at the same time, that's a good name. That's a good name that could sell that fight, you know, instead of just pulling some kind of unknown name out of nowhere, right? A virtual tomato can, if you will. I mean, we want to see what Andretti can do. He said he'd take the fight. I don't think there's any promotional differences that will prevent him from doing so. I mean, it would be a great opportunity. And like I said, he would take it on short notice. And even with that said, he's probably going to be taking sure money from that fight too. No big deal. It's a good opportunity. But I mean, here's now we got a major boxing date in Cinco de Mayo that's going to potentially be underwhelming, and that's not what we're used to. We're used to having great fights on Cinco de Mayo every year from the past in recent memory with Mayweather, Canelo, or just other fighters just capitalizing on that date and capitalizing on that audience. And now here you got Gillespie's team sitting on their rear ends, and we're close to the date, and we have nothing. It's ridiculous, and it's now something like this that also takes away from the specter of who Triple G is. Nobody's really scared of this guy no more, you know. And it looks just like what it is. He's clearly looking for that rematch for Canelo, and for the money. We know that, you know. I mean, now you're basically standing on your own. And you say who you say you are, and you got these belts. So where's the fight at? Where's your big fight at? Be jumping up at the opportunity to fight you. I mean, you call it in recent memory. I keep him to quote his name, Mayweather. It was always about the Mayweather sweepstakes. Everybody wanted to fight Mayweather to get that check, to get the opportunity. So he got a guy with 2-3 belts. So why isn't there the same type of interest in there for him? So. This is sad, his team, what they've done with him, you know. It's not the same way.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah, Mike Grady, you got something to say on that?
I don't really follow Usyk as much as probably you guys do. So I can't say that means a lot to me. But I would have definitely watched this fight because I knew the ramifications of it. As far as what fight we say, Golovkin and stuff. It probably was a good thing because is it still going to be a pay-per-view?
Well, I mean, up until like recently, they were talking about it would have still been on pay-per-view, but I think they like just recently said if it's going to be. You know, if the fight is going to take place, it's going to be on regular HBO.
Okay, so I think that's good that it's going to go on regular HBO and not on a pay-per-view. Even though nobody wouldn't have bought it, people still would like to watch the fight, and nobody would get to see the fight if it's on pay-per-view because ain't nobody going to pay $20 to watch the fight. That's cool, man. Andrade, like, I hear him calling Triple G out, but is he really serious, saying that he'll take him on a short notice or something? Like I hear him calling him out, but I don't know. I think that's a very tall order to say that you – it's one thing to call somebody out, which I know he probably has been calling him out before, but it's one thing to call someone out, like, and get a full count, but to be like, oh, I'll fight you right now, you know, without any practice or any lead up to your style or anything like that, I think that's wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much I actually believe that.
Yeah, here's the thing.
It would be a money issue. It would be something.
Yeah, my thing with Gennady Golovkin and his whole approach to his career, especially now in the tail end of his supposed career, is that his they've been, you know, promoting him as just like some type of unstoppable force and things like that, and being able to, you know, go through everybody. But he hadn't really had much of a challenge for most of his career. And you know, it took a little while for him to get to the point where he was actually facing guys like Daniel Jacobs. And when he fought Daniel Jacobs, we saw what happened. He pretty much got outboxed. He did score a knockdown, but he pretty much got outboxed for most of that fight. And he was given that decision with the sole intent of having the big fight against Canelo Alvarez. And then when he had the fight against Canelo Alvarez, to me, that fight was, like, underwhelming to a certain extent, because for me, in the first half of the fight, Canelo was outboxing Gennady Golovkin. He was outboxing him. And if he would have, like, kept that going for the whole 12 rounds, he would have easily won that fight, easily. But he kind of, like, faded out and let Gennady Golovkin get back into the fight. And even with that, Golovkin really didn't do much of anything to seriously hurt Canelo Alvarez, so it ended up being a draw. And so, to me, since we didn't have a clear-cut winner of that fight, now they, you know, basically got the rematch going. And with Canelo having those tests, it's almost like, you know, Golovkin and Tom Loeffler, you know, also buying into the whole thing that they're, like, kind of disappointed because they wanted the money out of that fight. They don't want to, like, take on the challenges that are now up there in the middleweight division right now. So, even with a guy like a Demetrius Andrade on short notice, they're not going to take it because, you know, whether they win the fight or they don't want to have any danger of, you know, not having a rematch against Gennady Golovkin and also not having the opportunity to fight Billy Joe Saunders for the undisputed middleweight championship of the world. Any other fight, they won't probably accept, you know. So, yeah, you do have, you know, Jermell Charlo out there that could possibly be the highest-ranked contender for the WBC belt, but I don't see any interest in Golovkin fighting Charlo. I don't see any interest in Golovkin having a rematch against Daniel Jacobs. I don't see him, you know, fighting any of those guys or Sergey Derevyanchenko, even though Derevyanchenko doesn't really have that much pro experience right now. So I just only see him having two fights of that caliber and then riding on out. So if he does have a fight on May 5th, then it'll be against a light touch, and then he's going to have the fight rematch against, you know, Canelo Alvarez. And if he wins that fight against Canelo Alvarez, he'll either have a rematch or he'll fight Billy Joe Saunders in his, 41st professional fight. And if he still is undefeated after that, he's just going to go off to the sunset undefeated, and that's pretty much going to be it, while only really testing himself one or two times in his whole career. And that's pretty much the gist of what I get out of Gennady Golovkin out of that. So what y'all thought about that?
I definitely agree. If you beat Canelo, then you all but say he about to retire and call it a day. I think after Canelo, can you see why he wouldn't want to take higher risk and lower reward?
Yeah, man, it's kind of understandable at this point of his career, but when he's, you know, basically said, you know, had like low risk pretty much his whole career, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the career of Joe Calzaghe. where Joe Galzaghi basically had most of his career in the UK, defending his titles there at super middleweight without really facing that part of the, I would say, the tougher part of the super middleweight division until much later in his career. And then after that, you know, going up to light heavyweight and fighting Bernard Hopkins at Bernard Hopkins' point of his career and Roy Jones at Roy Jones' point of his career. And him finishing, you know, his career undefeated, but who did he really face other than, you know, Martin Murray or somebody like that? You know what I mean?
At least he can say he beat both Bernard and Roy, though. Who else can say that?
Yeah, nobody can really say that there. Because Tarver can't, because he did beat Roy, but he lost to Hopkins. So.
Yeah, even jumping back to Golovkin for a second, I mean, we know, not to Ward's fault, he wanted to fight. He wanted to fight Golovkin. He would have took that fight. But we know that the network that Golovkin was on, it was essentially protected him from that fight, and so from that point, like you said, Jay, other than the Jacobs fight, who has he really fought? I mean, he fought Willie Monroe. Who was still at this point a B level fighter. He fought Stevenson. I don't know if I would ever call Stevenson an A level fighter, but he's a good fighter. But so I mean. So those fights that Golovkin always stated that he wanted, Ward would have been that perfect measuring stick for that greatness that he seeks and stuff like that. And imagine if Golovkin would have won a fight against Ward, how much greater would his status be right now? And well, at this point now, that's something we would never know because they never sought that fight. He's protected. So, and now he's in the conundrum that he's in right now. Like I said, you got a guy with two, three belts. But no dance partners, and he's supposed to be a moneymaker, and look at Canelo. Canelo's the one that makes the money in boxing right now, especially in these lower weight classes and things like that. You know, from like 160 on down, the money maker, the cash cow is Canelo, and right now that's tainted when you look at that. But that guy is supposed to be Golovkin with his supposed record, his supposed style. That's all HBO's backfiring on him right now, and as well as his team as well.
Mm-hmm. So I mean that's why I'm like kind of like waiting to see what happens, because I would say by the end of this week we'll see what ends up happening with Gennady Golovkin. Like I was saying, I don't see anything happening in Las Vegas. There for that particular matchup. I think, you know, the T-Mobile Arena is out. MGM Grand Garden Arena is out. So, you know, in order to kind of like save face, I think Tom Loeffler is going to try to put up a card in Carson, California. And he does have, Chuck Latino Gonzalez actually in a matchup against Pedro Guevara. That's slated for May 5th. So that kind of like says that we have that particular location as the plan for Gennady Golovkin to fight. So that's what I pretty much get out of that. I think Golovkin is just going to take it lightly until he gets that rematch against Canelo Alvarez, and then after that maybe one more fight against Billy Joe Saunders, and then right on out. And to me, with that being said, that kind of like makes Billy Joe Saunders almost have light touches in his career until he fights a Gennady Golovkin or Canelo Alvarez too. And what that does to me is just hurts the overall middleweight division, because we don't get, the good fights that we could basically get with these other talented fighters that are there at middleweight. But with, two or three guys kind of like holding the division up, that puts a damper into that whole division right there. Pretty much like on that note, wanted to, put an end to this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. You catch the next show that's going to be on Sunday. 7:30 p.m. We plan to be in Florida, so look out for that. Probably be in the area in Florida. I gotta see if I could try out somebody's food, because we post some food dishes and it'd be looking all delicious and stuff, but I ain't even had none of that. So I'm gonna see if I can stop by and see if I can get some of that. And
who food you doing that? Yeah, who food?
Looks like a chef TTP or so we're gonna get that arranged and done for Sunday. And like I said, we have the sister shows on the Go Long Media channel. I have the Cold Heart Tooth on Sports on Tuesday nights, and you have Take This Cell on Wednesday nights here. So be on the lookout for that. And like I say, at the end of every show here, the point of boxing is hitting like a hit. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, and thanks for calling, guys.
Later.